Welcome to the Brown County Hour.
Coming to you from the legendary hills of Brown,
where the plum purple haze,
the one nature herself drapes over the hills and hollers,
inspires local characters, artists, and nature lovers.
It's as though the hills themselves conspire to create a beauty and culture in the heart of Indiana.
Sit for a spell and hear the music.
Tall tales.
True stories.
And current goings on.
Brought to you by folks who still know how to sit by a fire in winter.
And swim buck naked in summer.
Welcome to episode 170 of the Brown County Hour. This is Sarah Lytle.
And Chuck Wills, along with the rest of the crew. Our musical guest this month is Bobby Jane Lancaster. She's returning to the stage after a hiatus of a few years with a new album and plenty of chances to see her live. We also have a series of interviews with local folks who recount their experiences with the massive tornado events that took place a year ago.
We have an essay from Jim Eagleman, an interview with Nick and Audrey Schultz from Brown County Coffee, and we go on location to Bear Wallow Distillery.
In our first segment, we have a conversation with Bruce and Donna Clegg about their experience during the tornado that took place a year ago. But first, we have an interview with Bobby Lancaster as she discusses her return to music and performs her song, "The Truth Has a Way of Not Dying," live in our studio.
Well, this is Rick Fettick, and I'm here with the Brown County Hour, and our special guest tonight is Bobby Jane Lancaster,
Hey.
An old friend. Thanks for coming in.
It's good to be back.
Well, let's just start. I remember you from the Players Pub in Bloomington, so you got a lot of history in Bloomington, and then you left and did some other stuff, and now you're back, so we're just trying to catch up. So.
Well, it's been a long time. It's been like 20 years.
Oh, wow.
I know. I hate doing the math, too. It kind of hurts. And it feels really good to be getting back to who I am as an artist and to be reconnecting with everybody that I've loved in Bloomington and Brown County. This was where I feel like I grew up as an artist. So really good to be back.
Yeah, and you were with the Gospel Girls, correct?
The Gospel Girls on FHB. I played with Stella and Jane, and we recorded together.
Right.
And Code Blue is where I started off Malone and Jeff Isaac and Ori Stith and Rex Miller. We had a great time together all those years ago.
What have you been up to?
Well, you know, I had children. I raised them.
How many is that?
Two.
Two?
Two,
awesome.
And they're grown-ups now.
Oh, my.
Yeah, so we moved to Greencastle to finish raising the kids, and then my marriage ended, and I started to decide that, you know, the person that I am as an artist was worth honoring being fully. And so that's kind of where life has taken me back to this place. It's like so many little full circle moments happening all at the same time right now.
So did you pretty much lay down the instruments and not write?
No, I wrote the whole time. I wrote the whole time, but I was just kind of keeping quiet. It was more about myself. Then I got involved in faith community, and that really anchored me for the years that I felt kind of isolated and alone. And so I was writing in the context of faith community. And then, you know, the things that have happened in our country over the last 12 years or so really had me questioning what do faith communities really stand for?
Right.
If it's not love your neighbor and that doesn't mean everybody, then what am I doing?
And how do you put that into words?
Well, I'm doing it with the album I'm putting out right now.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a love it or hate it situation, and I've got a plenty of both. So I'm proud of the work that I'm doing, and I don't mind the fact that it doesn't always come with a great reception from some.
That's true.
Yeah, it is.
Well, what about, we are going to be on WFHB, so tell us a little bit about that connection way back when.
Oh, man, WFHB has supported me from the beginning of my time as a musician here in Bloomington and Brown County. when we would do the radio shows, and I was part of the Gospel Girls, that was wonderful. Being part of Saturday's Child when I was working primarily in children's music back in the day was so beautiful. And one of the live recordings from Saturday's Child actually put out as a children's album. And one of the songs on that children's album that I recorded at the Firehouse is now a little children's book that I'm launching at Morgan Stern's in May on the 17th.
I was gonna ask you about the book.
Yes, I'm so excited about that.
Is there a title?
Yes, We Are All Connected is the title of the book.
Well, that is true.
And it is so precious.
All our little star cells that make us up from the universe and everything, we're all connected.
It's funny that you said that, because that's like one of the common themes in all of my writing is this
universal consciousness and all that.
That we literally have the composition of stardust in our veins. It's amazing.
So you're going to do a song for us? Let's hear that song right now.
All right. Well, I think I'm going to go ahead and play a song called The Truth Has a Way of Not Dying.
So here we go.
All right. Here we go.
We could roll out of bed and draw a line in the sand. Build a big wall and throw up our hands and insist that the other just can't understand. Make our differences hills that we die on. Well, the man on the screen tells us what to believe, so we don't have to wonder and don't have to think about politics, immigrants, guns, or vaccines. Just tune in and tune out and surrender. Let's cling to the cross and the red, white, and blue, and paint a picture of Jesus that looks like we do. Close the church doors to those who sin better than you, 'cause God's grace isn't great enough for them. Speaking of great, we should be great again. Like when rules were all written by wealthy white men. Back when women were quiet and those with brown skin were defined as 3/5 of a human. Shut out our beloved, and the least greatest will be seen as the greatest, and all we've buried will cry out in witness. All we've done and not done testifying for the truth has a way of not dying.
We just heard, the truth has a way of not dying. Thank you. That was beautiful.
Thank you. I'm proud of it.
You're kind of like doing a musical comeback.
Well, I'm just getting back to it. Just getting back to it. Just okay. Feeling strong enough to do it.
Takes a while to build up the back reputation.
Well, I think it takes a while to believe in yourself again after all those years too, you know? So again, I just feel like I'm so well received. I've got so many old friends in this area and so welcomed. So, you know, I'm excited to launch the children's book at Morgan Stern's on the 17th of May. I've got a couple of different house concerts I've been invited to do in the Bloomington and Brown County area, playing the Bluegrass Festival at Upland on June 13th.
Oh, awesome.
And then Doc Malone's kind of talked me into doing some of these Ladies Sing the Blues nights.
Oh,
next,
yeah.
And that happens in the fall. So.
Oh, yeah.
I'll be back and forth a lot.
Oh, Doc's a good one, isn't he?
He's going to play with me on some of the children's things, too. We're going to go play Riley Children's Hospital together.
Oh, really?
And sing for the kids there this summer.
Do you have a process you go through when you're writing a song?
You know, anymore, I feel like if I'm quiet and still, it's going to come to me. So when I'm sitting in the car driving and I'm kind of a captive audience and I can't do all the other things, that's when song comes to me a lot. But the album that I'm working on right now pretty much was written in about in a 24-hour period.
Oh, wow.
I was invited. Krista Tatora invited me to come down and do a writing day there at Airtime. And she put me in a little tiny home to write for the day, which was wonderful. It made me so happy. And I wrote songs that shocked me a little bit. Like the tone, I realized I was angry about what's happening in the world around us.
Right, well, that's...
I was angry at the current presidential administration. Mm. I was angry at people who claim faith and then support it. And all of that came out song after song after song. I think I wrote 7 or 8 songs just that day.
Uh-huh.
And so that's kind of, I think anymore, there's so much going on around me and within me, I almost have to be still for a little bit to write a completed piece. But that day, I ended up writing pretty much an album.
Once it starts to spill out, it's just...
Yeah. I hadn't experienced anything like that for a long time. So that was February of last year. Okay. And that's kind of what set me on the course that I'm on right this second.
Okay.
So kind of changed everything, and I'm thankful for it.
Right on.
Well, I hope that people will come out and to the children's performance at Morgan Stern's. And that's going to be Sunday, May 17th at 3 o'clock, and Doc Malone's going to join me for that. We've got a couple house concerts coming up, so if you guys are house concert people, please let me know. You can find me and contact me at bobbylancaster.com, and I can share some information with you. On the 13th, we've got the Bloomington Bluegrass Festival at Upland Brewery, and in October, there are a couple of Ladies Sing the Blues nights, so I'll be back to sing the blues and get back to my Bloomington roots at that point, too.
Right on. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
So anyway, well, that pretty much covers it. I sure appreciate you coming in, and I'm sure the audience will love you, and you'll get to hopefully make contact with a bunch of your old friends, too, that get to, you know, haven't seen you for a while, and maybe they can hear you on our show, the Brown County Hour.
Well, I'll definitely let them know that I'm playing, and it's always good to be back. I never get out of here without a couple good hugs, and feels like home. I think it always will.
Yeah. Okay, tell everybody all the ways they can get a hold of you and listen to your material.
Yeah, well, I'm on Facebook, and it's just my personal site, so if you want to be friends on the old Facebook, find me at Bobby Jane Lancaster, and it's Bobby with an I-E. So if you go to my website, you're going to want to spell it out as B-O-B-B-I-E LANCASTER.com.
Thank you, Bobby Lancaster, for coming in and talking to us and visiting with us and letting us hear your music.
My joy. Thanks for having me.
Sister, she told me, be careful what you believe. One day, girl, you're gonna see that you can't trust the man. Honey, words so sweet, gonna sweep you off of your feet. Promise everything you think you need, girl, but you can't trust the man. No. Can't trust the man, no. Ooh. Ooh. No, you can't trust the man. He's gonna tell you what to think, gonna tell you what you're gonna say. He's gonna try to take your voice away, girl, but you can't trust the man, no. No, you can't trust the man. Let me hear my sister sing. Come on.
This is Pam Rader for the Brown County Hour. And we have a wonderful treat tonight. We have two different couples that experienced devastation in the storms that hit this area approximately a year ago. And I always thought, well, tornadoes never hit Brown County because the hills, they bounce up. Well, that was proven wrong. And we had at least three events that I recall. So I'm here with Bruce and Donna Clegg. Hi.
Well, howdy.
I was down at your house Saturday and went down 135, and I was shocked again.
Mm-hmm.
To use your word, Bruce, devastation.
Yeah, devastating. And that was two tornadoes in just so much weeks of each other. Of hitting the north of us and then skirting on to the south of us were those two tornadoes.
And so you guys lost 120 trees, is that?
We our 10 acres. That was at night, if I remember right. And we were in bed and the wind was sounding really, strong and loud. And it wasn't until that sort of got really intense. And then when the tree hit the side of the house, we knew that was a bad sign. And so we went into our emergency plan, which was we had prearranged, which was Donna would jump off her side of the bed and I would jump off of my side. And that was about it. And take your pillow with you. And that's about all the plan we had for things like that. And we could see with the lightning that the tree hat was against the house. It was a cedar tree, so it wasn't bad. It just kind of made a big noise. It kind of brushed up aside, but it was very long. And it wasn't until the morning then that we have to go out and sort of discover what's going on. And then you start seeing things missing, giant trees that used to be there are no longer there, and what they landed on. And then we had gone through a little bit of this a couple years prior with a wind, and so we went around, hiked around the back 10 acres, and it was completely wiped out. It was all the pine groves are laid down flat. The big trees are just uprooted and laying there. There was a 130-foot tall tree. We were measured some of the trees, and they just laid down. And then some of them just snapped off, and it was just a devastating mess, everywhere.
It's just incredible. And this took maybe 5-10 minutes. Boom.
It wasn't even, it was just minutes.
A lot of rain and lightning and thunder and heard big booms and crashes. But woke up in the morning and we had one tree, a cedar tree in the yard, was up against a window, but basically missed the house. Another gigantic pine tree. It was a miracle. We had three buildings and it just fell right between all of them and just barely missed the chicken house. It kind of messed up the run of the chicken house a little bit. And it was an enormous tree. I mean, 8 feet around or easy. I mean, it was a gigantic pine tree.
That's incredible.
And, so Bruce went out the, woke up the next morning and thought, well, this isn't too bad. And he decided to, he says, I'll be right back. I'll do, go see if anything's, you know, going on with the woods. And he came back and said, there's over 100 trees down over 10 acres. Not as many as on one around the house, but in the acreage in the forest around the house. It just took almost everything. I mean, the big trees would fall down and they took little trees with them. And just we had two pine groves that were just... They just broke in half, split in the, not long ways, but just broke off right in the middle, big, big pine trees. And we had a beautiful woods and had a trail. And you couldn't even walk on the trail because it was just one tree after another, one this way, one that. I mean, it was just, they were all one direction, basically, from the west.
You were so lucky that none of your buildings were damaged, none of your vehicles. You guys weren't. That is just, like you said, a miracle.
And then weeks later, we had another one arrive that came from Bloomington that we paid attention to that one. We had a better plan. So Donna cleaned out the underneath the staircase because we don't have an interior room. Every room has a... window and everything, and no room. So all we had was the staircase, which was a closet. So Don cleaned out the closet, made us full of pillows, and devastating from so many angles. And it won't be put right probably for another 20, 30, 40, 50 years, really, until things start to regrow.
Well, I'm sorry you had to go through that. And I appreciate you coming and sharing your experience. It's important that people have a plan. This is Pam Rader, and I've been speaking with Donna and Bruce Clegg about the devastation they experienced a year ago and when the storms came through Brown County.
Now we pause for station identification.
You are listening to the Brown County Hour on volunteer-powered community radio, WFHB, at 100.7 in Brown County, 91.3 and 98.1 in Bloomington, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at wfhb.org.
Support for WFHB comes from Our Brown County, a magazine for locals and visitors featuring art, entertainment, and county characters since 1995. Printed 6 times a year and available online. More information at rbrowncounty.com.
In segment 2, Mark Three Hawks shares his tornado story along with some observations about the weather. And the segment closes with the Bobby Lancaster song, I've Been Thinking About Jesus. But first, we'll share a conversation with Nick and Audrey Schultz about the history of their business, Brown County Coffee.
This is Pam Rader here with the Brown County Hour, and tonight I'm pleased to introduce Audrey and Nick Schultz, who are owners of Brown County Coffee. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Pam. Nice to see you.
Thank you. I remember years ago when you were selling coffee at the farmer's market in Bloomington, and you said, oh, yeah, I'm thinking about starting a coffee business. Now, how many years ago was that?
It was 19 years ago.
No kidding. I was figuring maybe 20. Isn't that amazing? Because we were just getting started with our little Brown County Hour as an idea then, probably. And, well, that's amazing that you stayed in business that long. It isn't that easy to run a private business. Well, what was your idea to do a coffee business?
We met When we were 19 and his first birthday that I spent with him, I bought him a French press and some locally roasted coffee.
Partridge and Quigley.
And he said, well, that's really wonderful. Thank you. But I don't really drink coffee. And I said, well, now you do. So I think that was almost 27 years ago. And I'm pretty sure he's still drinking coffee and it's become our passion. You know, we started out just roasting coffee for fun. I think it was the early 2000s, 2003 or 4 maybe. And it's just, we've been really fortunate. It's grown from there. We've made so many friends and it's just a real joy to spend time working on something that we're so passionate about.
So recently you moved your operation, didn't you, and upgraded your equipment?
Yeah. During COVID, everything sort of paused and we took stock of where we were. And at the time we were renting from my parents at their place on Greasy Creek Road. And you know, that's where I was born, like physically born on Greasy Creek Road with no hospital, just some random people stopping by to help with the delivery. And so naturally that's where we end up roasting and starting the business. We were there for 15, 16 years.
That sounds about right. 5 years ago now that you were able to buy the new place. And gosh, it took almost 2 years of rehabbing it. And it was in bad shape, but he's really made it shine. It's quite the place.
Now that's in Gnawbone, isn't it?
Yeah. It is.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's just down the road from the Brown County Winery.
Is this roaster a huge machine?
Yeah, it'll do 240 pounds an hour very easily.
No kidding.
Yeah, we just got back from Brooklyn. We went to La Cabra and we were in a roaster masterclass with Michael De Renard. He's a Danish famous coffee roaster. And they have the same machine we do. In fact, they were sequential serial numbers.
Wow, how funny. Yeah.
Yeah, they were built one after another back in 2023.
Uh-huh. You know, so, we've come a long way from the garage and the little tiny contraption. We've worked our way up through the years. I think this is the fourth roaster now. So we've sort of been able to size up through the years and make them work to capacity, sometimes past that. So now we're fortunate we are able to keep up with all of the orders.
You know, I hear about the tariffs affecting coffee price, but also climate change has changed where coffee can grow. Do you have any comments on in the future or?
Well, it's just been awful for green coffee purchasing and pricing and honestly quality too. It's really hard to find good quality coffee when the overall supply is diminished because a little bit is just temporary. It's El Nino. We had a really bad El Nino back in the Central American area, South American area this past year that lowered crop amounts. And then there was flooding in Vietnam that was climate change related and that drove prices up to record levels. And then as soon as things started to regulate a little bit, we had to start dealing with the tariff problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there was enough just unrest with that, that they had to flip it the other way because pricing was going to the moon. There was hardly any coffee to buy in America because everybody knew it was temporary. And since there's no financial instruments to deal with tariffs, everybody was scared to buy coffee because if you get stuck with tariffed coffee and then there's no tariffs anymore, you could be bankrupt, especially when you're dealing with coffee and it's a huge commodity and there's no markets that provide hedges for people that have massive levels of inventory. It's just, you're on your own. Good luck. I hope you guess right. And because of that, nobody bought coffee. So there was hardly any good coffee available. The price was to the moon.
Now you're expanding into teas. And I ran into you at IGA. And I've now noticed your selection of teas are there. And
that's right.
Quite a few.
That's
right.
Do you
want to tell a little about how you got going in that?
Sure, I would love to. Tea has always been, and coffee, they've always been a really big part of my family growing up. with multiple generations in the same little neighborhood. The tea and coffee, those were the rituals that brought us together every day. That was a central happening part of our lives. And it just seemed natural to me to try to share that with people. From the many years of providing the coffee at the meeting people at the market, and the more I know people, the more it really pains me to turn someone away when they can't drink coffee or they just don't feel like it. I really wanted to have something for everybody.
How would people get a hold of you? Do you have a website, an email?
We finally have a website after many years. It's not the best. We're at browncountycoffee.com.
That's great.
Thank you, Pam.
This has been Pam Rader for the Brown County Hour. We're talking to the owners of Brown County Coffee, Audrey and Nick Schultz.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Mark Threehawks. I've been asked to speak for the Brown County Radio Hour about the storms that we've been having here in our county. And I live down on the south end of the county near Van Buren School. I've been living in this house since 1976, and I grew up down here on the south end. In this my time here on this property, I've experienced 3 tornadoes and at least 2 very harsh straight-line winds. And the first tornado, took out 32 trees from my front yard and did some damage to my barn, kind of devastated it, tried to pull the roof off the house. About $20,000 worth of damage was done on the property. And then we had another smaller one that took a few more trees and cracked some windows. And straight line winds that blew trees down, not really on me, but on the neighbors up the valley. And then here just recently, I think it was in the fall when we had that big tornado come through the south end, through the park and through us here. And I stood out on my front porch, and I watched this thing. Well, actually, I heard it first, and it typical sound like a freight train coming. We had some hail damage. The hail was kind of interesting. The first part of it was pea-sized, like large peas. And then it turned into things almost the size of tennis balls that were conglomerate, and they were just not really round. They were jagged and sharp. They actually punched a couple of holes in my hot tub cover. And I thought, well, that's not a good sign. We're up for something else. And then here came the tornado very shortly thereafter. And I watched it cross the valley about a quarter mile away. And of course, my first thought was to pray for everybody around here, all my neighbors and all the natural people who live here. And please protect us and keep us safe and well, and let no harm come to anybody here. And unfortunately, it took a neighbor's barn and his equipment away, and then just literally point blank another house down there and just emptied that house and went up over the hill and headed towards Grandview Lake. And it was pretty harsh. That was the harshest tornado I've ever experienced, and pretty brutal, really. I stood on my front porch and I threatened it. I told it, you don't come up here. If you come up here, I'll shoot at you. Hey, give me some relief anyway. But it's been quite a change in the storms here in the last few years, where they're becoming more frequent and more harsh. Between the rains and flooding and the hard winds, I don't really know what to make of that other than earth changes. And there's a lot of things going on with the earth and the changes and our sun and our planets and alignments. And it's we see what's happening because of all of it. And all we can really do is just pray about it and ask for protection and go on about our business and be as safe as we possibly can. Other than that, it's a good day to be alive. You know, thank you. It's Mark Threehawks. I'll see you later.
The Nashville, Indiana Farmers Market is open for business Sundays from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. in the Brown County Inn parking lot. This season marks 10 years of bringing our community together through locally grown food and live performances by local musicians. The Nashville Farmers Market is a nonprofit committed to supporting local farmers, home-based vendors, and independent artisans throughout Brown County and surrounding communities. That's the Nashville, Indiana Farmers Market in the parking lot of the Brown County Inn from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. every Sunday, May through October. More information online at NashvilleIndianaFarmersMarket.com.
I've been thinking about Jesus. I've been reading what he said. And I've been thinking about the woman that he sat with in the sand. And the crowd that gathered round them with her death sentence in their hands, executing their own justice by the blood-hungry law of the land. About Jesus and his brown and dusty feet, bringing freedom for the captives and the immigrant, the poor and the weak. But when I look around me, oh, everywhere I go, there's this other kind of Jesus, his military boot upon their throat. When did he trade in the old rugged cross and start waving the red, white, and blue? Oh, and when did he stand with the masters of war and forget about me and you? That he turned, and the way he spoke to power, and the way we never learned. Well, that other kind of Jesus has pulled the wool over our eyes till we see beauty for ashes and the good news for a lie. Forget about me and you. Ooh. 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 When did he trade in the old rugged cross and start waving the red, white, and blue? Oh, and when did he stand with the masters of war and forget about me and you?
Now we pause for station identification.
You are listening to the Brown County Hour on Volunteer Powered Community Radio, WFHB, at 100.7 in Brown County, 91.3 and 98.1 in Bloomington, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at WFHB.org.
Support for WFHB comes from the Brown County Inn. located just off the main street of Nashville, Indiana, at 51 State Road 46 East. Brown County Inn is also a restaurant, bar, and gathering place for visitors and locals alike. More information at browncountyinn.com. In our final segment, Jim Eagleman shares some information about the tiniest mammal in our forests, the pygmy shrew. And then we go on location at Bear Wallow Distillery for the last day on the job for their longtime employee, Scott Hampton. We'll close the show with the Bobby Lancaster song, How Can I Keep From Singing? But first, we'll share the experience that Steve and Vera Grubbs had during the same tornado event that our other guests went through.
This is Pam Rader, and I'm back again with the second part of our interview, The Storms a Year After. And I'm here with Steve and Vera Grubbs. Hi.
Hello.
Good evening. Pleasure to be here.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you showed up. I've heard bits and pieces from other people of your story about the storm, and I'd love to hear your version.
Well, I'll start off, and you're an appropriate opportunity to speak. We had just returned from a lovely trip to New Mexico. Friday night, about 8 o'clock, we pulled into our drive. It was May 16th. We'd come through very stormy weather, hail. We pulled into our drive. We were relieved to get home. Got out of the car. As soon as we got out of the car, I didn't hear the freight train sound, but the wind was very, very strange, eerie color. I said, Vera, get back in the car. We pulled into the garage and sat it out, which lasted about 2 or 3 minutes. And we got up, and our world was changed. Our lives were changed. The path of the tornado had about a quarter mile width, at least where it came through in our area. It had started in southern Monroe County, had a 35-mile path, stayed on the ground most of the time. And for Brown County people who bragged about, oh, we don't get tornadoes, well, we got a doozy. It was almost, just shy of an EF3, which was extremely powerful. It came through a lot of public lands, national forest, state park, a lot of private forest lands, and the path came right beside the house, took out a massive openly grown walnut that was just a marvelous shade tree. It would have crushed the house, except it came down just to the side. We looked around, and all the shade trees on the north side and the west side were taken down over time. And we engaged a local logger to do a salvage harvest. Our assessment was that about 35 acres was laid down. And this tornado, a lot of tornadoes will hopscotch, bounce off ridges, move around. This one just was like a bulldozer going through the landscape because it stayed on the ground and even followed into the valleys, the ravines and the ridgetops. We have two neighbors that are still out of their houses. It continued on just to the east of us is Happy Hollow Camp, but an enormous amount of we found a lot of building debris in our forest and our yard. Sad thing, we found children's clothing, children's coloring books that have been carried. For a 35-mile path, not that many homes were damaged, but it left a devastated landscape. If you've been through the horseman's camp, it's unrecognizable. It continued through our forest. I'd swiped the house. We have a meadow with an old metal barn that I had a lot of stuff, junk stored in. Took the barn, but left the junk.
darn it.
But I think Vera and I both feel... I think I understand what PTSD is now, to some degree. Certainly not from, you know, other perspectives, but any storm now really gets her attention. The sound, it was devastating. So we picked up the pieces.
You were so blessed that your house was saved and, you know, your lives.
I figured that I was in kind of a shock
And days later, I would find myself crying.
Yes.
Even now, looking at it, it's unhappy. But I'm grateful that we made it through all right. None of our animals were injured. So we're grateful for that.
Yes. One of the most important things is to come out with a plan, because they're saying we have to be prepared for more storms like this. So I've been speaking with Steve and Vera Grubbs, telling their story of the storms that came through here just about a year ago. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
It wasn't long after being hired as a seasonal employee at Brown County State Park in the mid-70s that I heard of a research project. Some workers told me it was in a remote location, so I went searching early one morning. I learned that it was conducted by a professor and some students from an Indiana university who, when I arrived, stumbled out of university cars, sleepy, stretching, and complaining. But they soon got to work and carried full trash bags with trash cans, the kind used in a commercial kitchen, and then they disappeared into the woods. I must have appeared official in my summer uniform and was greeted suspiciously. The professor admitted later that he had not applied for a DNR collecting permit, allowing him to collect in protected state parks. So he quickly had the students go about their work and got himself busy. I was more interested in learning what they were doing than if they had the proper permit. Shrews, the professor finally said. We're looking for different kinds of shrews. Many pitfall traps, the cans, were buried at ground level to capture the small mammals. The students came back several times to monitor what was caught and record their findings. Trap lines were installed along moisture gradients, starting at the top of a dry ridge and descending into moist ravines. While I knew shrews were insect eaters, and unlike mice and other rodents, lived a nervous life scurrying about the forest floor, looking for beetles and worms, but I didn't know different shrews had a preference for where they lived, or even that they were of different species. My first summer with the DNR was about to teach me many fascinating things. A few years later, and now as the full-time naturalist, I was entrenched in the property's most controversial and pressing issue, an oversized deer herd. Historically, Indiana State Parks had been established as nature preserves since their conception in 1916. No management of plants or animals had been conducted since those early days, nor had it been necessary, with no hunting of the property's chief herbivore and protected within the boundaries. Deer numbers at Brown County had grown over time to huge levels, with the forest's understory badly damaged. Wildflowers and grasses, flowering shrubs and young trees, colorful in each spring, attractive in food to many insects, had virtually disappeared, eaten to near oblivion by hungry deer. A biologist friend called me one day and said, "Hey, have you heard the study that might help you with the deer debate? You're the public relations guy, aren't you? You might like to read it," he said. "It deals with shrews, and they can be considered an indicator species. The ecologic upset of species with which deer coexist could be an appropriate and an important message to use," he reasoned. And as an educator, I had hoped to show the public and some doubting legislators an example of how deer can impact other species. The professor's early research project years earlier needed an update. It was just what I needed, so my staff and I set out to replicate the investigation. The initial baseline data showed five species of shrews existed in the 70s. The smoky, the southeastern, the short-tailed shrew, the masked shrew, and the pygmy shrew. Our research, conducted during the peak of high deer numbers on the same trap lines with the same number of trap nights, revealed only two species existing, the short-tailed and the southeastern. Total number of all shrews sampled had declined significantly. It wasn't difficult to see that if the herbal layer where insects lived was nearly gone, that shrews depend on them and they would disappear, and that's what happened. As is sometimes the case, research can reveal more than the anticipated outcome. The park shrew study we conducted, among other things, showed up as an up-close inspection of the trapped shrews. The one most likely and unusual to us, though, was the pygmy. Here we learned we had living in the moist ravines of Brown County State Park's Young Forest, the second smallest shrew in the world. So seemingly insignificant and unnoticed as we enjoy this natural place, small and less dynamic relationships do exist. And plants and animals go about their jobs, their niche. Ecologic relationships are so interconnected and dependent on one another, we often don't realize it until something is missing. Two, a keystone species, the white-tailed deer, can exert tremendous impact, influencing forest ecosystems. A miniature pygmy shrew, so small we may not see it on the forest floor, is akin to other insect-eating, burrowing, scurrying shrews, and lives its quiet life in the hills of Brown County. Certainly a part of this living system, and among this tiny claim to fame, it comes in second. Jim Eagleman for Nature Ramblings, the Brown County Hour. Thanks for listening.
All right, this is Chad Carruthers for the Brown County Hour on WFHB. I'm here at Bear Wattle Distillery, and it's a very special day for one of the longest-running employees here at Bear Wattle. Go ahead and introduce yourself and tell us what you do.
My name is Scott. When I first started, I was working production in the back, which involved a little bit of everything, bottling, tasting out of the barrels, doing some cooking of the grains, even some running of the still a little bit. I eventually ended up here in the front and have been serving customers with tastings and cocktails ever since.
So when you first got started, what attracted you? How'd you end up here in the first place? What was interesting?
There was a job fair here in Nashville, and Susan, the owner of Bear Wattle, she was there, and I talked to them, and it just seemed like it was a good matchup. They were looking for somebody to work production in the back. I had been a semi-pro bourbon taster for about 30 years up to that point. Let's just say I tasted a lot of bourbon up until that time. And so it just worked out. And this ended up being a great job for me. Susan is a great employer, and it's been a fabulous run.
What exactly are you making back there?
So it's all whiskey. Everything is whiskey here. Bourbons, ryes, straight whiskeys, unaged whiskeys, flavored moonshines, you name it. A little bit of everything for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about the move to the kind of the front of the house here where you're facing with customers. Tell me about that transition from working in the back to working in the front.
Well, so working in the back always involved some working in the front. And there was a period of time where I got physically injured and ended up not being able to do some of the heavy work in the back any longer. And it just made sense to spend all my time working in the front.
Yeah, yeah. So 10 years.
Yes.
And today's the last day.
Today's it. Yeah, you know, you spend your life maybe working for and looking forward to retirement. It's a little bittersweet. It's like the day has finally arrived that I always thought never would arrive.
Well, speaking of bitters and sweet, we're going to listen to you mix up an old fashioned here. Let's let the Brown County Hour listeners hear what that sounds like. Okay, that sounds pretty good. So that was Scott here at Bear Wattle mixing up an old-fashioned for a customer here on Sunday, March 28th, your last day on the job.
Yes.
Okay, so what's next for you?
Next, I'm a lifelong musician.
Really?
I am.
Okay. You know, we feature musicians on the Brown County.
Well, I've been in many bands over the years. A buddy of mine... we reunited like 4 or so years ago. We've decided to start our own record label. Very, very small.
What?
Just to release our own stuff.
Okay.
So, you know, we're old guys. We play rock.
Okay.
You know, and so that's kind of... That, gardening, chasing cats, that's about it.
Okay. Yeah. What's the band called?
Well, it's three letters, S-H-P. So it's Stuart Hampton Project.
Okay.
Little bit of everything.
Okay.
Pink Floyd to rock to whatever.
Cool. Yeah. All right, this is Chad Carruthers on location at Bearwallow Distillery with Scott on his last day of work here for the Brown County Hour on WFHB.
Thank you.
Congratulations again.
Thank you. Cool. Appreciate it.
My life goes on in endless song, above earth's lamentations. I hear the near but far off hymn that hails the new creation. No storm can shake my inmost calm when to the rock I'm clinging. If love is Lord of heaven and earth, how can I keep from singing? When though the tempest loudly roars, I hear the truth it liveth. And though the darkness round me close, songs in the night it giveth. Through all the tumult and the strife, I hear its music ringing. It sounds an echo in my soul. How can I keep from singing? When tyrants tremble in their fear and hear their death knell ringing, when friends rejoice both far and near, how can I keep from singing? In prison cell and dungeon vile, our thoughts to them are winging. When friends by shame are undefiled, how can I keep from singing? My life goes on in endless song, above earth's lamentation. I hear the near but far off hymn that hails the new creation. No storm can shake my inmost calm when to the rock I'm clinging. If love is Lord of heaven and earth, how can I keep from singing?
Thanks for tuning in to episode 170 of the Brown County Hour. This show was recorded in our studio at the History Center here in downtown Nashville and brought to you the first Sunday of every month at 9 a.m. and the following Wednesday at 6 p.m. And anytime online, be sure to look for us on your favorite streaming services.
The Brown County Hour is brought to you by a diverse group of folks who believe, now more than ever, the world is for everyone.
This show was produced by
Chuck Wills,
Pam Rader,
Rick Fettig,
Vera Grubbs,
Lucy Schultz,
Sarah Lytle,
Chad Carruthers,
and Dave Seastrom. We would also like to thank Slats Klug for our theme music. You have been listening to the Brown County Hour,
coming to you from deep in the woods of Brown County, Indiana.
Celebrating the arts, culture, and nature that make this such a unique community.
Visit us online at browncountyhour.com.
The Brown County Hour is a production of WFHB.
Volunteer-powered, listener-supported community radio for South Central Indiana.
Take me back to my home, Brown County. Home.